Hello, my friends. Welcome to another edition of the Celebrant Talk Show. My name is Josh Withers, and sitting across from me, a couple of thousand kilometres distance across the desk, is the much revered, honoured, and lovely Sarah Ed. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, everybody. And we really shouldn't confuse people. I do have a lot of people who say to me, do you fly to Queensland like every week to film those podcasts? No. Due to the magic of technology, I am in my office in my house in Melbourne. Josh is in his office in his house on the Gold Coast. And we can have a chat and then mesh the audio together and it sounds like we're in the same room. Amazing.
You know what's funny? It's like I travel to Melbourne a fair bit and you and I have caught up on a few of those times. But like I don't, and I know you don't have the technology to actually record a podcast in person. It's actually easier for us to sit in our offices across the country.
Much easier. And it's funny because somebody, one of my friends was looking into doing a podcast and she's had they're in person and they are having a real issue with getting the audio to sound schmick because they're all in the same room and like all their microphones are picking each other's voices and it's all a bit messy. And she's like, how do you do it? I'm like, we're just in different cities.
So for those of you that are thinking about getting into podcasting, let me give you three really quick tips on audio because this is something that actually took me years to figure out and I worked in radio. Step one, turn the volume on the mic down a little bit so it's not picking up as much audio, but then that does require you to speak into the mic and close to the mic. And so a good mic distance. This is if you're at a wedding ceremony or if you're doing a podcast, doing radio, you want to be able to lick the microphone. If you can't lick the mic, you're not close enough. So turn the mic down a little bit, but be really close. Secondly, turn the volume in the headphones down a little bit because then less audio leaks from the headphones back into the microphone. And the third one is just have a non-terrible microphone. Like you can spend on anything from $50,000 to $50,000 on microphones. And look, you know, for $50 you can kind of go okay. And there's much better mic guides out there. In fact, if you want a mic guide, I can hit me up online and I'll send you a guide by Marco Armands. But just having a better than terrible microphone is good. Like you don't have to spend the big money, but maybe just don't get the cheapest one available to humankind.
It's like when you order wine at a restaurant, you buy the second cheapest option.
Yeah,
isn't that what they do?
Yeah, it's maybe like third cheapest.
Yeah.
How you doing, Sarah? You good?
Yeah, good. Today I am drained and we are recording today on Friday the 22nd of June and I'm pretty tuckered out because I had a super, super big day yesterday. Some of you will know this because you follow my Celebrant page on Facebook, but yesterday I was honoured to be the celebrant who conducted Eurydice Dixon's funeral. For those of you who don't know, Eurydice Dixon was a 22-year-old woman who was found murdered in Carlton last week. And it's gathered national media interest because she was walking through a park at midnight and was attacked. And so there's been a lot of discussions about community safety and victim blaming, and we shouldn't tell women to pay more attention to their surroundings. We should tell men not to rape and beat women. So it's been pretty huge. That has kind of taken on a life of its own. But when it boils down to it, this is still a grieving family, just like all the other grieving families that I serve in my funeral work. So Eurydice's brother called me on Tuesday afternoon, mumbled something about reading my profile online. I still have no idea how they found me, but I'm not arguing. I was sitting with them by 3 o'clock Tuesday afternoon, immersed in their shock and grief. But they are a most extraordinary family. They feel no hatred. They don't want vengeance. They're not even angry. They're just deeply, deeply sad. And mourning the loss of this bright, beautiful young woman who had her whole life ahead of her. So they feel that their personal grief is very separate to the wider community issue around public safety and toxic masculinity and male rage and those sorts of things. And while they totally are on board with all of the discussions that are going on and, you know, the morals that have come out are very much in line with how they feel, they just don't want to engage with those issues at the moment, which is completely understandable. So really, for me, my big task was putting all of that out of my head. Yes, this is the tragic death of a young woman, but ultimately I needed to serve them in the way that I would serve any other family. So I sat with them for 2 hours on Tuesday afternoon. I went home. I wrote a script. We went back and forth a bit on Wednesday, and by 10:30 yesterday morning, I was standing in the chapel at Victoria Funerals in Brunswick. About 250 people came through the door, which for a private funeral is quite a lot. The media were remarkably respectful. They stayed out of the funeral home grounds and stood on the other side of the road with their cameras. Really, all they wanted to capture was the hearse leaving the funeral at the end. And for an hour and a half, we sat in that chapel and we celebrated this remarkable young woman. I gave a eulogy. There were 9 speakers. Her friends and family were incredibly articulate and eloquent in the way they spoke. You know, some of them are comedians, that they're clever with words. That's what they do. So they were amazing. And I did walk away, as I often do, feeling a little bit sad that I never got to know her, because she clearly was very special and a bit of a one of a kind. So we had an hour and a half. There was lots of laughter, which I think is really healthy at a funeral, and I always encourage that. I give permission at the beginning of all of my funerals, not just to cry, but also to laugh and smile if that feels right, because sometimes people need to be given permission to feel other emotions. So we had lots of laughter, lots of sharing, some amazing music picked out by her family. She was a big music buff. And after an hour and a half, we headed off to the family and close friends headed off to the Northern Memorial Park for a burial, which also was beautiful and poignant. So it was an incredible day. I felt exceptionally honored to be given the opportunity to, you know, work with this family and get some insight into the life of this remarkable young woman. And I was lucky enough to get a text message from her sister late last night saying how pleased they were and how many amazing comments they've had from the people who were there. So as much as it was draining and, you know, a big day, my cup is full this morning. I feel very lucky to do this work, and I know that I'm – this is going to sound terrible, but I know I'm very good at it, and I know that I did that family justice, and I feel very secure in that knowledge. So yeah, today you know, I'm tired, but I feel good. I feel I did the best job that I could, and I don't feel that family could have had a you know, much better experience with anyone else. I feel like I was the right person for the job, so I feel good.
You know, there's so many things that go through my head when we talk about this funeral, because it's funny, when you mentioned that you were doing it, I, like, even having the insight that I do to the industry, I didn't even consider that there's a very personal grief going on, that there's a family and there's friends that have lost their daughter, sister, friend. And because the outrage and the news and the media is so great that I just didn't really kind of contemplate that there was something very personal going on here, and that would be a really odd thing to try and straddle, wouldn't it? Because as you already mentioned, you know, like, you were affected by the circumstances after her passing, and what it means for you as a citizen of Melbourne, what it means for you as a woman, and just a citizen of Australia. And there's so many of those conversations going on that there's also something very personal happening as well.
That's right. And it really sort of just reminded me that the circumstances of someone's death don't define them, and that we can't concentrate on those bigger issues around circumstances and the way someone died. We really do have to concentrate on the person that they were and on their family and friends and those, yeah, you're right, those very personal grief things. I remember when I told you I was doing this, you sent me a text saying, what a massive responsibility. And it was interesting to me because to me, the responsibility for me was exactly the same as the responsibility I have for all of my other families. It was to do that person justice and to honor their life. Apart from all of those other things about male and female relationships and community safety and so forth, that stuff is separate. And the family really views that stuff as very separate. It was interesting to hear from them about, you know, their views about the media coverage and about the vigil and all those sorts of things, because they really, it's almost like she's a token or a mascot for these bigger conversations. And I think that's the way, that's what you were thinking, you know, about, forgetting that she was still a person, you know, this is a person with family and friends. And it's so easy to do that because we conflate these massive issues with the person who's brought those about. And it's, yet to me, it's almost like she's a mascot and not really part of that. You know, her death has brought about these conversations, but they're actually not about her. So for me, it was about remembering that she's just a person. Just a person sounds wrong, but she's another person. This is another family, another set of friends who, yes, are going through a very deep personal experience of the loss of this, of their daughter, sister, and friend.
I don't really know how to transition from there, but I didn't want to spend the whole, I don't know, because obviously the personal nature of that is what it is, and you've done a great job there. But I did want to kind of, in an effort to transition, I just wanted to acknowledge something you said, that that you're really good at this. And I suppose I just wanted to publicly affirm that you are, because you know you are already.
Thanks.
But like it, we don't really have the permission as Australians to say that.
Yeah, I know. It's really hard. And I often feel a bit funny saying that I am good at this, but I am. I just am. And it's, yeah, and that's okay. And I've actually had several, several people in the last 24 hours, several other celebrants say to me, yes, it's about the family and friends, but you should also feel good about the service that you provide, and you should be able to sit there and go, you know, I've done a great job and I am good at this, and that means that I can service families in an amazing way. And, you know, that's a great thing to be able to sit there and go, yeah, you know, finally at the age of 38 and a half, I found my thing, you know, this is my world, and I'm good at it. And that makes me, you know, gives me good job satisfaction. It makes me feel very lucky that I found, I don't want to call it a calling. I don't really think it is that, but I feel lucky that I found this role. And I think that I do a great job in looking after people in this way. And I feel very lucky because I know that a lot of people will work their entire life and never find a role that they feel truly satisfied in. So yeah, I feel pretty cool that I've managed to get to that.
Good on you.
Okay. So that was a deep and heavy way to start the podcast. So let's now move on to something completely frivolous. Josh, you want to tell us a little bit about the new Instagram service that has rolled out. Is it today?
Well, you're probably yesterday officially in America, but IGTV is the new. It's not necessarily a new social network because it's by Instagram, which is by Facebook. So it's just another, I suppose, bow in there. And they're had to give you the opportunity to share and to be in people's lives. And so I think I've talked about social media before, if not in this podcast, then in other talks. But all the social media is the same in its heart, that it's giving you an opportunity just to tell a story. It's giving you an opportunity to be a broadcaster, because you don't need to go to Channel 7 or to the Daily whoever, or it's you know, you get to be a broadcaster now. You get to have your own audience. And Instagram TV or IGTV is just another opportunity of that. But it's kind of very closely saddled with Instagram. You can see IGTV notifications inside Instagram, but also there's a separate app. And the interesting thing is that you don't actually create the video inside the IGTV app. Like, you know, if you do an Instagram
Hang
story.
Hang on, let's just backtrack a little bit. When you say talking about a video, but what is Instagram TV?
That's probably a good question to start with. What is IGTV?
Yeah.
So IGTV is it's Instagram's competitor to YouTube. It's a video service. It's a TV service. It's a watching video service, but it's by Instagram/Facebook. And what makes it different to YouTube is that it's not about landscape video. So kind of like a standard video, it's about tall video, so mobile shaped video.
Really? And mobile shaped, like held upwards, not held sideways.
Yeah. So you know, if you go and watch your YouTube,
they're
videos,
sideways.
You turn your phone because that's how video is made. But Instagram TV is not like that. It's tall.
Huh.
It's a tall video.
Portrait video.
Portrait.
Wow.
Yeah. And. And so it's all kind of linked into Instagram. So you and I can have IGTV accounts. You just open the IGTV app and you go through the settings and create your own channel. But you upload video that's up to an hour long, and it has to be in that tall format. It's not like you can't just repurpose other video of me. You got to make new video. And I suppose the reason I'm excited about it and the reason I wanted to talk about it on the show is there is such a spectacular opportunity for celebrants to speak into wedding culture. And I suppose, you know what, let's extend this out to funeral culture the funeral industry and the culture around that is something that I'm so not versed in. And maybe there's a whole other conversation there about how, people in the funeral, industry can adapt to this kind of social media. But from the wedding point of view, I see celebrants as so powerful in that we are the arbiters of meaning and purpose and words. When so much wedding stuff is like, oh, pretty. Like, well, we get to be the people that give a shit. We get to the people that infuse the meaning and the purpose and the heart along with the pretty stuff. And that's why social media is so powerful for celebrants, because it's literally what we do. We tell stories. We talk. And IGTV is just another opportunity. Now, it's a really cool opportunity because it means you can create videos up to an hour long. And like any social media, you've got to be offering value. And when I say offering value, I'm not saying like a free upgrade to a package 3 or free chips with that. But no, actually literally offering value that maybe someone would watch your video and they're getting married and they go like, oh, that was actually helpful. Like, I actually feel better. I feel enabled, or I feel liberated, or I feel helped. So along with any social media, and this includes IGTV, I'd encourage all of our listeners just to embrace the technology as a new place for you to share stories, which is our greatest opportunity as celebrants, not to advertise on social media, not to market. I see so many celebrants doing, you know, images with text overlaid on it. Like in the month, this month, we've got 20% off. Like, you know, 20% off doesn't actually offer a value to anyone. Because if anything, it's just to you. It's saying, hey, look, I'm worth less than I actually said I was.
Yeah, totally.
and if that is all, if that was the thing that's going to bring someone over the line to hiring you, then, it was a lost cause already. But if you can literally bring value, if you can share your belief system with getting married and how that should work, and if you can actually bear your backbone and say, hey, this is what makes me a celebrant, this is what I believe, and it might be that you have to respect people's privacies, and you might not say I was at Jack and Jill's wedding last week, but I was at Tom and Sally's, and this happened, and here's, you know, and this is how it made me feel, this is how it made the crowd feel, and this is how you could avoid it, that kind of thing. Just really simple content, because people getting married haven't been married before, generally. Like, generally speaking, like, well, I don't know if you know an actual stat. Like, what's your vibe on first marriages?
Yeah. Like, well, I mean, there is a stat somewhere, which I'm actually too lazy right now to look up, but I promise I will look them up and put them in the show notes. But I mean, for me, I think probably first marriages are 75%, maybe a little bit less than that. But yeah, definitely the majority of my work is first marriages, or at least the first marriage for one of the couple. So both parties, you know, one of the parties might have been married before, but at least one of them or both of them, this is their first time.
Yeah. So if you were in the TV business, or if you were in the selling cars business, if 70% of your potential clients had never bought a car, what a great opportunity to get on the educational front foot and just be a person that offers value and like, hey guys, here's what a gear stick is. You might not have used a gear stick before.
And to be perfectly honest, a lot of the parties who sit on the other side of the table from me, even if they have been married before, they can't remember. They don't remember the legal stuff. They don't remember, or it's, oh, my partner did that stuff. I don't know anything about it. So, you know, a lot of that increases the percentage of people that we can be talking to as if this is a new experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
So here's my question about IGTV. It's video, right? So it's audio and visuals. So podcast long form works so well because you can listen to a podcast while you are driving, while you are walking or running or exercising, while you're doing other things. Video requires much more intentional attention, yeah? You really have to sit down. If you're going to watch a video and take it in, you have to sit down and watch it. And you know, I remember for years they've been telling us, when you do video, make sure it's no longer than 3 minutes, 90 seconds, 60 seconds, you know, because people's attention span is so short now that they'll get bored and they'll click off. So I'm wondering why there's now this move to, or, you know, whether this move to long form video is going to be successful. I'm curious, you know, I mean, I know that YouTube has, you know, a whole lot of people who do all sorts of things on it, but I'm just really interested that we're moving away from, hey, people have really short attention spans, so don't give them anything more than 45 seconds, to, hey, video something and put it up there for an hour and off you go. Do you know what I mean? Like, do you know what I mean? Am I making any sense at all? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you are making sense, but let me put it back on you and this is honestly just like marriage ceremonies, not to make everything like as celebrants at the center of the universe, but hey, this is the celebrant talk show that, I'm sure that there have been really long marriage ceremonies that went for 10, 15 minutes. And I'm sure that there's been really short marriage ceremonies that went for an hour. In the same way that like, there have been great movies that went for 3 hours and great movies that went for 1 hour. That the length in actual minutes isn't the important thing. It just like I don't know how many people come to you, but like, I always want a short wedding. I'm like, yeah, cool. I get that. But what you're saying when you want a short wedding is what you don't want is just fluff and hours of blah, 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 blah. But if we're going to do something, let them matter. And so the same to IGTV, the same to YouTube, the same to Instagram stories, the same to all of it is that if you've got something good to say, if you've got something valuable, if you've got something that could help, then let it take as long as it needs to. No longer, no shorter, which is kind of how I, when I talk to people about my marriage ceremonies, I said they're as long as they need to be and they're as short as they need to be. No longer, no shorter. Because that's the correct length of a marriage ceremony. I'll also tell them, look, I kind of aim for my ceremonies to be a little bit like a TED talk, which is 18 minutes, because that's a good amount of time. Like something important has happened, but I also haven't lost you. But with that said, not every ceremony is 18. Like I can't do an 18 minute ceremony every time.
That would be quite the skill.
You know what? I've looked at a few of my last videos. I thought, wow, my last three have hovered around 18 minutes.
Nice which, work.
Yeah, like, because I'm not counting. I don't have a timer going. I take as long as I need to take. But I've done ceremonies that go for longer, and I don't know if I've done ceremonies that go for shorter.
I have, maybe a few for shorter, but not many. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, not many, but a handful. So the same thing with IGTV is let it be as long as it needs to be and as short as it needs to be. And, you know, that comes down to some prep. That comes down to what am I going to say? Why does it matter? And one of the greatest advantages you can have in trying to face content creation like this, whether it's IGTV, whether it's Instagram stories, just Instagram itself, Facebook, YouTube, is it really forces you, and if it's not forcing you to do this, then you're doing it wrong, but it really forces you to think, what matters mm-hmm. to people? Like to the people that I'm marrying, the people that would hopefully pay me money, the people that would hopefully engage with me and email me, what matters to them? And when you do that, you really start changing some things around, whether that's in your ceremonies, in your marketing, in your website, in your emailing. If you can make yourself a customer-focused business, you'll really start seeing yourself make some really different decisions.
Yeah, that's really good. And I think maybe what I'm hearing here is people need to not just do IGTV for the sake of doing it. They need to, you know, if you're going to do this, do it properly. Think about exactly what you just said. Think about what matters. Think about what's going to be useful. Because if you just do it so that you're on the platform like everyone else is or whatever, that's probably the wrong reason. And you're yeah, not, and you're yeah. probably not going to create content then that is useful and that people will actually watch the whole thing, if you're just yeah, doing it yeah. for the sake of being there.
There are two little technical tips on this. You can use your phone to create this content, and that's completely like I recommend doing that, particularly because it's tall. In an ideal world, you would use the back of your camera, the back of your phone, not your selfie camera, because the selfie camera is not as good quality as the front. But, you know, you've got to work out what works for you. But you can get tripod holders for iPhones or whatever phone you have, so that the camera is still. And if you want to do this, like, don't burden yourself by having to get all the gadgets and all the toys, but you can get a little iPhone thing for a couple of bucks, you know. And if you've already got a tripod, get a tripod, or so get that tripod. If you haven't got one, like, you can pick up a cheap tripod, and at least that way the video is still and it's pleasant to watch. And then the other thing is audio. And literally just this morning, Rode, the Australian microphone brand Rode, R-O-D-E, just released a new, it's like a little snap-on microphone that plugs into the bottom of your iPhone. So it's got an iPhone adapter. If you've got an Android, it has adapters for that, just to make the audio in your phone a lot better.
I've got one of those Rode mics. So, I've got the, obviously not the new one. It is amazing what a difference it makes to the audio, having that little, it's just a little lapel mic. And it really does make a massive difference to the quality of the audio.
Yeah, absolutely. So the one that I'm talking about, it's a little kind of stick mic. It's like a little, imagine a pen
or a
cigarette size thing that kind of butts into the bottom of the phone just to increase the audio quality on your phone. So you don't have to go full pro and get a bloody video studio, but if your phone is still, so it's pleasant to watch, and if you have a microphone on the bottom and the audio is a lot better, then you're immediately ahead of 90% of the crowd. If you want to go a little bit crazy, try and get better lighting, but like at this point you're just putting cream on top.
Totally. Yeah, cool. Well, I'd really love to hear from any of our listeners if you are using IGTV, if you're interested in it, if you've had a look at it, if you think it's going to be useful for your celebrant business or anything else that you do. Drop us a line at hello@celebrant.fm. We'd really love to hear from you.
So the way I'm going to start using it is I get videos of all my ceremonies because I've got little nerdy video camera thing. And I'm just going to start dropping snippets of my ceremonies onto IGTV.
Cool. Yeah.
And also doing other content as well. But just to give people an opportunity to say, this is what a ceremony looks like. This is what one of Josh's ceremonies look like.
Yeah, awesome. I love it. I think that's great. That actually gives me a nice little segue into – are you done on IGTV? Is that okay?
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. Gives me a nice little segue into what we're going to do next, and that is respond to some of the inquiries that have come through at the hello@celebrant.fm email address, which has been really great. We have been quite slack. Some of these are from April and March. Sorry about that.
We've had a really busy couple of months.
We really have. And I promise that we did respond to some of these by email. So we're not just giving these people their answer now. So I know that some of these people want to stay anonymous, which is totally fine. But the issues that they raise are important for all celebrants. So the first one that I want to talk about is one that we received at the beginning of April. And it's about the kind of the definition of a ceremony and what is required to make a marriage valid. So you might see people advertising, for example, I have a legals only ceremony. Other people advertise a paperwork only ceremony, registry style ceremony, registry wedding, blah, blah, blah. So this is a little bit about advertising, a little bit about what makes up a wedding in order for the marriage to be valid. So my reading of the Marriage Act says that in order for a marriage to be valid, a few things have to happen. A notice of intended marriage has to be lodged at least a month before. As close as possible to the ceremony, declarations of no legal impediment need to be signed. Celebrant needs to cite various documents. On the day, two witnesses need to be present who appear to be over 18 and are able to hear and understand the ceremony, or there's an interpreter. Nobody else has to be present except the celebrant and the couple and the two witnesses. The minimum requirements of the words that need to be spoken are those set out in sections 45 and 46. So the monotem for the celebrant to say, and the minimum legal vows, which are in section 45, for the couple to say. The celebrant needs to introduce themselves. Both parties' full names must be included at some stage. And that's all that has to be said. And then the three marriage certificates need to be signed. So my reading of the Marriage Act says that's it. And then those documents have to be sent to BDM. That's it. There's nothing in the Marriage Act that says you have to have a certain number of guests, you have to play music, there has to be readings, there has to be personal vows, there has to be anything else, a dress, an aisle, rings, suits, flowers, fancy cars, a cake, any of that. All of that other stuff is about the party and about the wedding, and that's extra. The minimum requirements to make a marriage valid, I introduce myself, say the monotem, the couple says the legal vows, we sign the documents. That's it. So there's been some argy-bargy about what is the minimum requirement and how should that be advertised. I feel quite comfortable in the way I advertise because I call mine a legals-only ceremony. So at no time do I say that a ceremony is not required or that a wedding is not required. I say this is a ceremony that includes only the legal requirements. And in my statement about it, I say we say a few words, we sign some documents, and your husband and wife, off you go. So there are some in the celebrant world who suggest that that's not enough. And they're responding to things like the Ultra Electric, which is a company here in Melbourne set up by some of our seller buddies that are offering registry-style weddings in funky venues. Now, it's really interesting because in all the reading I've done about the Ultra Electric, nowhere have they said that they don't offer a ceremony. Yet, somehow this argument has come out of the media attention that the Ultra Electric has had. So, the Ultra Electric they give like a 10-minute ceremony. So, the couple turns up, they've already submitted their notice of intended marriage. They turn up, they show their passports, their divorce certificates, whatever. They have a chat with the celebrant about how they got to be together and those sorts of things. Then, you know, a couple of minutes later, they're up there in the space with their witnesses as a minimum, but sometimes with some guests. The celebrant is good enough that they just riff on that information that they've been given off the cuff, provide a quick ceremony with some, you know, words about how they met and why they love each other and blah, blah, blah. Monotem, legal vows, sign the documents, off you go. I have no problem with that either. That seems fine to me. There is, however, a problem with celebrants who advertise a paperwork-only marriage or a drive-through marriage with no ceremony. And this is about the definition of the word ceremony. You can't get married if all you do is sign paperwork. People do actually have to say some words. The celebrant does have to say the monotem. The parties do have to say the legal vows. But that's the ceremony. That's it. That is the whole ceremony. And there's nothing in the act that says what defines a ceremony. So paperwork only, if you're advertising that, please try and move away from that, because it is implying to the marrying public that they're not going to have to say any words, that there's going to be no words said at all. It's implying that they get to just turn up and sign some paperwork and they're married, and that's not correct. But a legals only ceremony, registry style ceremony, there's, you know, I've seen kiss and go ceremonies, all sorts of things like that. I don't have an issue with that. And again, it's around the definition of the word ceremony. Other people are going to have other definitions of what that means, but the Marriage Act does not require anything other than those words to be said, which actually is like 121 words. There's not very many words there at all. So I hope that that makes sense. Yes, of course, it's lovely to provide more, to provide, you know, all sorts of lovely personalized items and all those sorts of things. But some couples don't want that. Some couples are having a big wedding overseas, so they're doing a big ceremony overseas and they don't feel the need to do it twice. Some couples just want to get married. They don't want to have a big wedding. They're quite happy to just get married. So to me, it's the couple's prerogative that if they just want the legal wording and the paperwork, then that's all they get. It's totally fine.
So there's a whole range of thoughts around this, because so I know in my business I call it a paperwork only ceremony. Mm-hmm. I suppose that's been born out of couples trying to define what that means. And have you heard this before? Where you turn up for one of these and like, it's a wedding, great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's happened too many times. And you know what? The big thing for me is like, you want a wedding, but I'm not prepared for a wedding. And so that's, I'm actually trying to stop you from being disappointed. Like, there's a reason we charge different amounts, because one of them involves me getting to know you, and one of them involves me making sure that the paperwork's completed appropriately and that the correct legal marriage ritual is followed. And so I suppose I know I've always communicated in my paperwork only ceremony that I say the words required, you say the words required, we sign the paperwork, you're in and out in 5 minutes. And that's the communication that I've always put around it. And I suppose I'd push back on your request that people wouldn't use paperwork only. Paperwork only marriage, I suppose I've got a bit of an issue with, but also we're abiding by the Act. And although the guidelines might move a little bit closer in this direction, I'd love to see this tested by the courts, because there's so much assumption about marriage law or so much interpretation that hasn't been tested by a court. As much as it kind of sucked seeing a few of the recent celebrant problems that have kind of come through the go on WA and the consent, like, I'm glad that we're actually starting to push back on a few of these things and actually define like what does consent mm-hmm. look like, and what does a paperwork only ceremony look like, and I think we're going to have this more and more. Like, there's been talks about the Queensland Registry Office becoming a little bit more, well, the birth, death and marriages, but their registry style ceremony aspect becoming a little bit more commercial. I heard it maybe a year or so ago, but they're talking about having marriage offices around the state. When I think that's a hilarious wording to use, because there's a celebrant in Western Australia who's got the marriage office branding down pat, and he regularly convinces couples that he's actually a government agency,
which is completely illegal. Celebrant. And the advertising guidelines say you cannot do that, and it's really important to make sure that your couples do not think you're a government office.
But if you look at it all, he's completely within the guidelines. Like, he's legal. I haven't done a top to bottom kind of an analysis, but in no way does he imply anything. He just he does what the law says, and it's and because there's only so much you can regulate this. But I can see that at some point soon this is going to come to a head, and it's going to go to court, or it's going to come down to a celebrant being reviewed in their professional professional, what do you call it, review?
Well, I mean, I'm hearing the person who was talking about this said more than one person has lost their celebrant license because they offered drive-through signing only with no ceremony. Now, I don't know if that's true. I obviously personally haven't heard about that, but I've only been around for 4.5 years, so who knows? I think it's about perception. And I think that I think this comes down to more, it's more than just the Marriage Act. It comes down to consumer law. And if we are advertising paperwork only, yes, you've got the word ceremony in there, so it does suggest that there's going to be something else happening. But does the regular Joe Blow on the street know that? Or do they think that? And I suppose this, it does come down to how you explain what that means as well. But we also know that generally couples have very different interpretations of what legals only or short and sweet or whatever mean. So I've had couples come to me say, we want legals only. And I've sat down and gone, right, this is the legals only. And they've gone, but where does Dad get to give me away? And where do my bridesmaids stand? And when do I walk down the aisle? I'm like, yeah, okay, you're not looking at legals only. You're looking at short and sweet. So for me, I have those different packages clearly defined. And I can say to them, this is actually not what you're looking for. You're looking for something that's got not a lot of fluff, but you actually want more than just the legal wording and the certificates. So, yeah, I guess it's about consumer perception. It's about explaining what we do. It's about making sure that people don't think that they're just going to turn up, sign some documents, and they'll be married. This was one of the things that came into play with that couple in Queensland in 2016, where he was a migration agent, she was a celebrant, and that they were arranging marriages for Indian men for a significant amount of money. And that is what was happening. The women were coming to their house, they were signing the paperwork, and off they went. No words were said. So those marriages were not valid. In order for the marriage to be valid, at the very minimum, the parties, this is for a civil marriage, the parties need to say the Section 45 vows. Yes, the monotone is also important, but the marriage is protected if that doesn't happen under Section 48. The celebrant will get in trouble, but that's another story. But at the very minimum, the couple needs to say the Section 45 vows. So if we tell them that all they're doing is signing paperwork, then they might arc up, or this might suggest that the Section 45 vows are not as important as they actually are. So yeah, but I guess it's about explanation. I guess it's about setting the expectations. I know that with my legals only couples, I actually sit down with them and go through, this is what's going to happen. And I know that you do this too, Josh, but some people are still stupid. I sit down with them and I say, I'm going to say this, you're going to say that, we're going to sign the paperwork. And it's actually written in a document and they can look at it. And I go, that's all that's going to happen. There's not going to be any music. There's not going to be an aisle. There's not going to, and they go, oh, okay. And some of them go, oh, that's not enough. I need more. But most of them go, yeah, that's exactly what we want. So I think it's about setting the expectations. But in terms of the legalities around how we advertise, there are some advertising guidelines on the Attorney General's Department website. But I just think it's important to set consumer expectations appropriately. And you know, I do have people call me and say, we just want to do the paperwork, or we're just looking for a marriage registration, or we're looking for paperwork only. Then it's my job to educate them that, sure, we're going to do some paperwork, but we're also going to say some words. Because some couples don't know that that's a requirement. So it's my job to educate them about that. So I hope that the person who raised this issue in the first place has got an answer out of all of that. I just think for anyone out there who is offering a kind of legal minimum ceremony, make sure that all of your advertising and marketing material sets out that not only will these people be signing paperwork, they'll also be saying some words, and those words create a ceremony.
Just before we leave the topic, I'm trying to find, as we do with all of these things, I'm trying to find the exact reference saying that we can and can't do things rather than just talk about hearsay. And just with a quick search while I've been recording with you, I can't find the part of the guidelines or the advertising guidelines. Well, the only reference I can find is in the advertising guidelines. There's an example given, which I quote, "The phrase registry weddings is often used to mean small, less formal weddings, but could be taken to mean weddings carried out at a registry of births, deaths, and marriages. Use registry style weddings instead and make it clear where they can take place." So it's not even a...
Does it then go on to say, make sure the couples don't think you're a government office?
No. So in the advertising guidelines I'm reading right now on page 2 at the top, it
certainly used to say that. Or maybe it's it's in Marriage Celebrate Matters. I'm just going to move away from the microphone for one moment and get my lovely display folder that has all the old editions of Marriage Celebrate Matters. I'll be right back. One moment, please. Josh, please talk for a moment.
Sarah Ed is such a nerd. Such a nerd that you've got all of this stuff printed in folders. I should have it, but I don't have all the Marriage Celebrate Matters in my Dropbox because they've almost never offered any kind of value to me.
Look, we know that I'm a massive nerd, okay? That's nothing new. I have them all printed out. And the reason I have them printed out is because I take them to OPD with me. And because there's all sorts of good stuff. And one of the things that I did suggest when I did the big review of the new guidelines was anything in these Marriage Celebrate Matters that I thought was useful, I suggested put that in the guidelines because people are much more likely to read the guidelines than they are to read Marriage Celebrate Matters. Okay, so in the Marriage Celebrate Matters Summer 2015-16 edition, on page 3, there's a section about misleading advertising and blah, blah, blah. Consumer protection and fair trading laws make it illegal to mislead or deceive. Celebrants must therefore ensure their advertising is not misleading or deceptive. The registrar continues to receive complaints from couples and BDMs about confusion resulting from some celebrants' promotion of registry-style weddings. Celebrants who offer this style of wedding should take particular care to ensure their clients know they are not dealing with the BDM. Do not assume clients understand the difference. Some practical steps you can take to avoid confusion include: do not imply that you're a representative or employee of either a state or territory or the Australian government. Avoid using terms like registry office, registry wedding, or marriage registry in your signage, website, blah. Have a notice prominently displayed on your website stating that you are not affiliated in any way with the BDM. Tell your clients directly that you are not the BDM before you accept a payment or confirm a booking. If it appears from emails or conversations with your clients that they think you're the BDM, take immediate steps to correct them and provide them with the correct details for the BDM.
Okay, so just off the back of that, they've given a list of a few words you can't use. But for example, Perth Marriage Office, not in that list, or Marriage Office per se.
I mean, registry office, registry wedding, and marriage registry. Yes, agreed.
But here's the thing: you can't just go off opinion. If you're going to say yes or no, we have to be quoting fact. And so, if they're going to issue a statement saying do this, don't do that, they also need to go forth and in something more than an email, those things are good guidelines. But aside from that, they've also made one of the statements that you should make sure that everyone knows you're not the BDM. Should the front page of my website say, hey, I'm Josh Withers, I'm a marriage celebrant, not the BDM?
I think they're suggesting that if you offer those types of ceremonies, you should make it clear that you're not BDM somewhere connected with those ceremonies, which I guess I don't do either. But I think that the issue here, and this is the issue with the guidelines as well, is that a lot of these things literally are guidance. They're not a black and white, yes or no, you can do this, you can't do that. And the MLCS, the Marriage Law and Celebrant section of the Attorney General's Department, they're very clear that they do not provide legal advice and that anything that they lay out here is recommendations rather than a must, because unless they legislate for something, it can't be a must. So there's nothing in the Marriage Act that talks about not saying that you're a marriage registry office. I suppose there is stuff when you look at the consumer law, it talks about deceptive and misleading conduct. And I guess this is an interpretation of what deceptive and misleading conduct is. And again, it would need to be tested in a court of law. But as I always say in OPD, if I had to go to court and stand on the witness stand and say, put my hand on my heart and say, I believe that I did everything to ensure that this marriage was valid and I did not break consumer law or do anything else. If I could stand there and say that I had followed the guidelines, including the advertising guidelines, including what's in Marriage Celebrate Matters, I would be in a much stronger position than if I just went, yeah, but none of that's like a must. So I just did my own thing.
Absolutely. And you know,
yeah,
I agree with you on this.
We're playing devil's advocate here.
But also, yeah, but I'm also the person who my whole career has been dotted by people making big assumptions about my business and big assumptions about how I do things. And so that's, I especially enjoy playing devil's advocate from that point of view, because I just think that we could ask more questions and maybe be a little bit more creative, because that's how we move ahead is we push back and they issue new laws, or they issue new guidelines, or they issue new Marriage Celebrate Matters that I want to read, or
except Sarah.
Well, I do read them as well. They just send me to sleep on the second or third page. I'm like, is this not the same information from the, every other bloody marriage? But I did want to close on an opportunity that someone should definitely register. Registry of Gold Coast based celebrants offering paperwork only ceremonies.com. Because I think that's an allowable name.
I don't know,
I think,
man. That's a long domain.
It's okay.
You might have some marketing or SEO issues around that.
You know that I joke, but the words we use around all that are really interesting, because like, not to keep on harping on about marriage office, but like, it means everything but means nothing. And it's funny, you go to New York, it's called the marriage office. Mm. That's where you go, the marriage office. But then marriage office in Australia isn't what it's called. There's no marriage office in federal, state or local government. But it still has that real vibe around it. And there's so many words like that, like institute, yeah. Or, you know, even group, or, you know, those kind of things that we can they have this official vibe to it, but they're not official. And I think the important thing, that if you offer paperwork only or registry style or whatever you want to call it, like getting married without a big hula, I would definitely, I wouldn't exclude the word ceremony, and in no way would I, in my material, my words and my, you know, further digression from the title, I would make sure that people know that I say a thing, you say a thing, we sign paperwork. But, you know, don't be afraid to be a little bit creative.
Yeah,
with your name.
Totally. I think that people should be more creative. I think they call themselves the Melbourne Private Marriage Registry in South Yarra here. And I have spoken to couples who have thought that that was BDM. So let's do away with confusing names. Like, why would you want to pretend to be BDM anyway? Because, like, registry weddings are a bit shit. So, like, let's be creative. Let's come up with new ways of talking about the work that we do, so that it's just more interesting for everyone.
You know, this is just the whole, like, I'm just kind of letting my brain explode into a podcast, because heck, we're allowed to do that. It's our podcast. But instead of going for the fancy names, if you're a celebrant hard up for cash, why don't you just get a t-shirt made that says, you know, whatever your price is, $500, you know, paperwork only ceremony, or whatever wording you use, and that's your t-shirt. You stand at the front of BDM. Stand inside if you want to. It's a government office. Gosh,
no,
it's terrible.
Think you'd be asked to move along if you did that. Yeah. So we've now been crapping on for almost an hour, and I think that we've got some more inquiries to look at, but I think that maybe we should leave them till next time. What do you reckon?
No.
Oh, you want to push through?
Let's knock them
out. You
want
to push through?
Yeah, knock it out.
All right. Okay.
Because we'll have this running podcast list of things to talk about that we'll never get to.
I keep looking at the list and we just never get to it. But okay. So, all right. Well, the next one was another request from April, and it was from a lovely celebrant student. They're studying to be celebrants online, and they were struggling with the issue of copyright. The course covered the topic a little bit. They were finding it confusing, so they wanted some guidance around the legalities of playing music during the ceremony and the readings of poems, lyrics, etc. by friends and family. My immediate response to this was to send them the information on copyright, which is on the Coalition of Celebrant Associations website. So COCA, for those of you who know, is the group that kind of is the peak body for celebrants that has representation from most of the celebrant associations around the country. And they've actually got some really awesome content about copyright that kind of sets it out really clearly and says what we can and can't do. There's also some great content in the guidelines. The 2014 guidelines, the copyright content starts on page 120. There also is information in the new guidelines, but of course they're not in force yet. So the biggest thing that I want to say for copyright is that generally whatever happens during a ceremony is protected from copyright, kind of. So a wedding or a funeral ceremony is, for the purposes of copyright law, is viewed as a private function. Therefore, you can play music without having any kind of AMCOS or APRA or copyright license to play the music during the private ceremony. Videographers who put music on their video, that's a whole other issue that I'm not getting into because that's not relevant for us as celebrants. We can play music during the ceremony without having any music playing license. That's totally fine. We can read lyrics, poems, booklets, blah, 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 whatever, during the ceremony. That's totally fine. Of course, you should attribute whatever's being read to whoever wrote it. And many of the associations provide a copyright license, which allows you to print certain amounts of copyrighted material in orders of service for funerals or in orders of service for weddings, things like that. So, but generally, as wedding celebrants, copyright's not a massive deal. If we are putting readings on our website, we do have to consider it. If we're providing like a presentation copy of the ceremony with copyrighted material in it, we do have to consider it. But on the day during the ceremony, generally protected.
Yeah, I have nothing else to add to that.
Awesome. We will put the link to the COCA stuff in the show notes, so you'll be able to have a look at that yourself and see that.
You know, just
quite
on the general copyright thing, like this is even for getting weddings. Don't be afraid to educate yourself. Like it's actually really easy to Google a few things. If you want to get a book, I've got a book on my bookshelf, which is all about business, creative business law. And you know what? If you can't right now answer the difference between what's the difference between copyright, trademark, and a patent, then just even if you spend 5 minutes just with a bit of Googling trying to figure out what that is, just because I don't know if you realize this, as a celebrant, you're in business and you have a responsibility to the stakeholders of your business, aka yourself and anyone close to you, to know the difference so that when someone steals your idea or when someone steals your words off your website, when someone steals your photo, that you can accurately and correctly know how you've been wronged, if you want. And this appeals to the whole law, because if you don't know, if you think that you've got a right but you don't, then, well, that's your fault. It's your fault for being ignorant enough to not do a little bit of research to figure out what are your rights and what are your responsibilities, particularly in regards to copyright, because being involved online, so many of us have got photos on our website. And do you have permission to use that photo? And if you don't know, you should probably figure that out.
So sensible. And I know that there are a lot of discussions in wedding vendor groups about other vendors using photos that have been taken by photographers with and without permission and credit. And it's just important. Well, it's important, A, to educate yourself around the law, but it's also important just to be a good person And like, don't use stuff that you don't have permission to use, or that you don't credit the creator of it. It's, you know, just be like, be a good person. I always talk to my couples about, I want you to tell me all of your vendors so that I can be a good wedding industry citizen and tag them on my social media posts, because it's just
absolutely
being a good
person. It's a responsibility you've got just to not be a terrible human in all this.
Yeah, totally. Which I hope is like an aim of everyone, to not be a terrible human.
Maybe.
Who knows? Who knows? So moving on to our next request. This one was from March, and it was about wedding expos. So this listener had listened to a previous edition where we talked about wedding expos, and it had motivated her to book into exhibit at her first one. Congratulations. She hadn't done that in the 6 years she'd been a celebrant, so that's awesome. So she asked us for information around tips and ideas for success, ways to record data, relevant software, styling tips, big no-nos and must-dos. So, I mean, Josh, I have plenty to say on this issue, but would you like to weigh in first on your wedding expo experience?
Yeah, like as I think I've said the last one, talked about this, I've got a real love-hate relationship with wedding expos because they've delivered me much success, but I also don't love them because just say 1,000 people walk past you at a wedding expo, just making up numbers. 1,000 people walk past you. The truth is, maybe out of the 1,000, maybe 300 are Josh kind of people. And maybe out of the 300 that are Josh kind of people, maybe 200 are kind of willing to pay my fee. Maybe I'm available for 100. So there's 1,000 people there. And really quickly, I've gone from 30%, 20% to 10% of those people. Like, maybe we could do business. And look, I know these numbers probably don't they're not actual numbers, because if you got 100 bookings out of a wedding expo, you'd probably go to every single expo ever. So, but just say there's 1,000 people walk past and 100 people end up booking you. When I'm online, or if I'm on Facebook or on my website, those 1,000 people may well also walk past me online, whether it's they visit the website or see me in the Google search or see me in the directory, and they see me, and 700 won't click any further, and I never know that the 700 exist. I know that the 700 exists because I see them in the web, like in the number of people visited my website, the web stats, but that's the closest I get to knowing that they exist. I don't have to talk to them. I don't have to go, oh, how much? Oh, this much. Oh, I would never pay that much. I just never get to meet them.
You don't have to feel rejected by them.
No. So online, I've got a perfect little kind of world where nothing ever goes wrong and everything's lovely. But in a wedding expo, you really have to have thick skin, because you're standing there in the marketplace, in the slaughterhouse, just putting your business up against everyone else's, and you've got to be able to sell yourself, and you've got to be able to stand there and have a good conversation about who you are, what you charge, what you do, what makes you different to everyone else. And you need to be able to answer those things quickly and easily and simply in a way that people would remember. And that's hard. Like, that, honestly, that's hard for me, and I think I'm good at it. And if you're not good at it, God, I don't know how you could consider doing it, because not all of us have got that sales blood in us, particularly as those of us are celebrants. Like, we generally tend to be a little bit more on the heartfelt, meaningful, kind of giving a crap about people side of the thing, as opposed to the used car salesman. Like, there's not many other used car salesman type of people that are marriage celebrants. Like, to be a marriage or a funeral celebrant, you've generally kind of got to give a crap about people. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So like it would be really hard to be a scam artist and a celebrant. Like, that would, those are two careers that wouldn't really line up that well. So for a marriage celebrant to get up and be a bit of a salesperson publicly, it takes, you've really got to dig within yourself. So that's, I suppose that's my thing with wedding expos. Now, the wedding expos you usually find me involved in these days are more to do with relationship and branding, as opposed to getting leads today. That's the main reason that I, Josh Withers, do a wedding expo. I'm not saying that's why everyone should do one or why everyone shouldn't do one, but that's the main reason that I'm involved in expos, is that a friend or an industry friend is holding an event and I want to be supportive of them or be supportive of the venue. Maybe the venue is, you know, involved in stuff. And that's why I would do an event, not because I am intending to go in there and get 100 leads, but because I want to be in relationship with that venue, be in relationship with that planner or the magazine or the group or whoever's doing it. And so that comes with it a different tact as well. Like before you head on to your strategy, have I missed anything or anything that you think I should cover?
Do you want to get into the nitty gritty of, you know, how you get leads and how you
I'll talk about those two things, style and leads. I've always tried to edge towards a simpler design for a marriage celebrant for two reasons. One, you just want to create as little work as possible for yourself in the day, whilst equally being excellent. So I'm not saying be lazy and just do nothing, but equally try and do as little as possible whilst doing as much as possible, because you've usually got to cart this stuff in from bloody 10 kilometers away and on a little rickety, trolley or something like that. So don't overwhelm yourself by overloading how much work you're going to be putting yourself into, because that's just hell. We've all been there where we're carting expo stuff across a car park in the rain and just hating our life. So my design has always been on the simpler side. My previous design I was really proud of. It was just a backdrop stand. Like, imagine if you're a photographer doing studio photography and you want to do a backdrop of like a white sheet or something like that. You know that kind of look?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, so I had one of those stands, and then on it I had a scroll with my – just a big white thing, big white kind of scroll that had my name in the middle of it, Josh Withers, because I thought, what do I want to say? I want to say my name is Josh Withers and I'm a marriage celebrant. So I had my name, Josh Withers, and guess what words I put beneath Josh Withers?
Marriage celebrant.
Yeah, you got me. Because I wanted to something that signified this is Josh's space, but come and talk to Josh if you want to talk to Josh. And then I'd just have a little box with some business cards on it, not in the hope that people would collect them from there, but if I wasn't there, then at least there was something. But if I was there, just something for me to put business cards on. And in recent times, I've had an iPad for collection of data, which I'm going to get to once I tell you what my current stand is. My current stand is it was designed by a stylist friend of mine, and she designed it knowing that I'd use it for many expos and fairs. And it's it might be five or six kind of, imagine sandwich boards, but good quality, like nice kind of hardy sandwich boards, like not your crappy one, but like a good one. And Amy from Perfect Party Co., she got a bunch of photos of me, really good photos, like, you know, beautiful, like one in Ayers Rock, one in Iceland, one in Wanaka in Queenstown, and ceremony photos to say, this is Josh. So she wanted five photos that screamed, this is Josh Withers. And she kind of screwed them to the front of the sandwich board. And then the middle one had a perspex circle that has my name and logo on it. So that if you look at it, it's kind of like five photos of Josh and his logo. And yeah, I kind of like it. It's nice and simple. Setup takes seconds. And the hardest thing is just carrying in a couple of boards. So that's my current stand. And what I do to collect data, because I think that's important. If you're going to be there, collect data. And I have the MailChimp app. MailChimp has an iPad app called MC Collect. I'm going to Google it while I'm talking. But the MailChimp app allows you to...
I think it's MC Subscribe or something, isn't it? I don't know. I've got it too.
MailChimp Subscribe, MC Subscribe, yeah. And so that app, you can create a little fancy kind of, you know, splash screen. Maybe it's a photo of you, maybe it's a photo of whatever, and a little kind of, so you put some words in there, and the words will be significant to what you're hoping to do with it. If you're doing a giveaway or something, mention that, like throw your email address in, get a, you know, win a prize. Or I don't really do that. I just, what I do is, I say, if you want to, enter your email to receive an information pack. The email address is there. They click subscribe, and I've got a little automated routine in my MailChimp. Then when they subscribe to my MailChimp, they get the information pack as well.
That's a little awesome.
Zapier routine. Yeah, just click bang. And because I also recognize that this is just in the wedding industry, let alone at wedding fairs and expos, that that everyone's at different stages of the wedding process, and there's a celebrant in Byron Bay who likes to call people over and over and over and over and over and call 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 until they just want to kill her. And don't be that person, because everyone's at different stages of planning, and everyone's everyone's on a different timeline. So I would rather equip my couple. Say, here's all the information I think you should know. I'm going to add you to my email list, and I'll do a regular email out, and so you'll get that. But I'm also not going to personally bug you until you so choose to be bugged.
Yep, totally. And on that, I've had a couple come back to me at the start of this year who I met at an expo in October 2015.
Yeah, the timeline is weird, hey?
And they've come back this year, and they're like, yeah, we're ready to book, and they booked. So, yeah. Don't bug them. Just be ready.
So what's your expo strategy?
Oh, yeah. I keep doing them. Every time I do another one, I go, that's the last time. I'm never doing them again. Because I find them really exhausting. You know, my feet hurt. but they're useful. In my first year in business, I took 50% of my bookings from expos. I did 9 expos that first year. Of course, my approach to expos in terms of what I say to couples and the styling of my stand and how I collect data, all those things have evolved over, I think I'm up to 29 expos. I'm going to do my 29th expo this week. Obviously, those things have changed quite a lot, but I'm still there. I do them for lead generation, but also to network with other suppliers. And I've talked about that before. So the networking can be really, really useful. In terms of the styling, I have a number of times posted on Instagram and Facebook the evolution of my stand. So now it's all about the wall of selfies. And as far as I know, I'm the only celebrant who does a wall of selfies at the expo. And, you know, I take a selfie with every couple straight after the wedding and post it on my social media. And it's actually much more strategic than most people think. I was having this conversation with one of the directories that I advertise on, and she said, I'm trying to find a really nice photo of you to like post on our socials, but all you've got are those bloody selfies all the time. I'm like, yeah, and here's all the reasons for the selfies. And I will admit that I stole some of these reasons from Josh. So the taking of the selfie in the first place, it goes, hey, look what we just did. I just married these people and look how happy they are. B, it doesn't show the dress. And some couples are really thingy about not wanting anyone to post on social media until they can and show the first image of the dress and blah, blah, blah. So the selfie just shows their happy faces. So then I post them on social media. Congratulations. On social media, it shows how often I'm working because I post it immediately. So it's kind of that social proof that the selfies keep popping up because I'm doing it straight after the ceremony. I'm not waiting to get the professional photos back 6-8 weeks later. This is happening straight away. So then at an expo, my first year, my stand was pretty basic because I didn't have any pretty pictures. And I would look around at other celebrant stand and they would all have pretty pictures of them at ceremonies. And so I kind of tried to do that, but I found it really hard to get professional photos back. It was just like, you know, that can be tricky. So then I went, I could put my selfies like on the table. I could give that a go. And then I went, I could even put the selfies on the wall. So that has now evolved into the wall of selfies. So if you look at my social media, the most recent one was the 29th of May. You'll see one again this weekend. Basically, the wall of selfies is literally what it says on the box. All of the walls of my stand are covered in selfies. And again, this is very strategic. A, it goes, look at all the weddings I've done. Like, people stand back and they go, wow, you've done a lot of weddings. Yeah, I have 251 weddings as of yesterday. So, yeah, that all of those selfies, they show how many weddings I've done. Two, it shows the diversity of couples that I work with. So everybody, almost everyone who comes up to my stand can see themselves in those selfies. If it's an Asian couple, they can see an Asian couple. If it's an older couple, they can see an older couple. If it's a same-sex couple, they can see a same-sex couple. They can see that I work with people like them. And the beginning of my pitch is always, as you can see from my wall of selfies, I work with lots of different kinds of couples, different ages, genders, shapes, and sizes. And then I go on to talk about how they all like personalized ceremonies and blah, blah, blah. So, and the third thing is the same thing as when I take it. It shows how happy all those people are that I married them. Look at all those happy smiley faces. Look at all of these people who I've married and look how thrilled they are. You could be that thrilled. Look how happy you could be after your wedding. And if you really want, then you could be on the wall of selfies. And it's taken on a life of its own. I get people coming up to me at expos who go, I saw you at such and such's wedding. And I go, oh, they're on the wall. They freaking take a photo of the person that they know on the wall of selfies and send it to the person that they know, which is hilarious. When I post the picture of the wall of selfies on my socials, I have previous couples who still follow me on social media and they go, oh, look, we made it onto the wall of selfies. There we are. And they'll like circle themselves and they love it. They love it. It's really interesting. I had a celebrant I know come and look at my stand in October and he said to me that he said, I love it and I hate it. He said, I hate it because it's a bit self-absorbed. You're in every single photo. But on the other hand, I love it because you're in every single photo and it shows how much you work. So it was...
Can I interrupt for a second? Look across all the wedding websites. We've seen enough fucking wedding rings and bouquets.
Totally.
Like, honestly, like we... If your website at all says you're a celebrant or wedding, like, we get it. You work in weddings. We don't need more photos of wedding rings and people getting married and whatnot. What they need to know is like, you're not just celebrant. Are you Sarah Aird celebrant? Right. I can see your face in the photos. In fact, if I can just do a call out to all celebrants, I've seen your websites. Put a bloody photo of yourself on there. Like, they're hiring you. Like, just have something that would identify you. So when they meet you in the cafe, they know who you are.
And not just any photo. Make it a current photo that actually looks like you.
No, come on. A photo from when you were 16 is okay.
There are celebrants who have really old photos and they turn up to the couple and the couple goes, I know. That's not who I called.
I know.
But yeah, you're absolutely right. They want to see. So this celebrant who made that comment, he, his philosophy is he's never in the photo. So he's like, the ceremony is about them. I stay out of the photos. I never have a photo with the couple, blah, blah, blah. That's his thing and that's fine. But for me, I'm like, no, I want people to see that I'm at that wedding, that I'm, and I did have a lovely elderly gentleman who was with his daughter at an expo a little while ago, and he came up to my stand and he was looking at the wall of selfies and he went, there's someone who's in several of these photos.
Oh, God. That's beautiful. That's so cute.
I went, yeah, mate, that's me. And he went, oh, it is too. Bless. So that's, for me, that's the styling. It's all about the wall of selfies. And then I've got some words that say Sarah Aird Civil Celebrant and some booklets that I hand out. So that's styling for me. The ways to record data, I'm the same as Josh. I have an iPad. I've got a stand that I bought at Officeworks that is nice and heavy and the iPad locks into it. So it means that that sits on my expo table and it means that someone can be entering their details on that iPad and I can be talking to another couple. It means that I'm not kind of worrying about, is the iPad going to go walkies or do I have to do the entry or anything like that? And the MailChimp subscribe app is good because it works offline. So you don't actually have to be connected to the internet, at the expo. it collects all the data, and then the next time you connect to the internet, it uploads it to MailChimp. So that's handy as well. I have met celebrants at expos who've had no way of collecting client data. And they say, oh, if they want to hire me, they'll contact me. Guess what? They don't. Couples meet so many suppliers at an expo that it can be quite overwhelming. And often, if you don't make the first move, they won't either. I can count on one hand the number of couples who have booked me from an expo who contacted me before I contacted them. It's very, very few. They are usually responding to the email that I have sent out the next day. So you need some way of collecting data. Now, when I started, that was a clipboard with, you know, paper forms on it and a pen, and that was fine. I just got bored of typing it up the next day and having to interpret my handwriting and all that kind of stuff. So whatever works for you, make sure that you have some way of collecting information from the people that you meet so that you can follow up with them.
Yeah, and look, I'm going to push back on the writing things now with the pen. They don't want to do that. They don't care about you that much.
Well, I used to write. I never asked them to write.
Yeah,
things
no, out. It was okay. Like in previous years, just if you're doing this in 2018,
yeah,
like don't like that. It's really hard to get people to care about you that much.
True, very true. Unless you're giving away something amazing, because I mean I've met people who've been giving away a free ceremony at an expo and they've come away with 150 bits of paper filled out by couples because the couple was more concerned about the free ceremony than about the celebrant who was providing that ceremony. I've never wanted to provide a free ceremony because I want people to want to work with me, not just to get a free ceremony.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, you know, that's another thing about giveaways, discounts, all those sorts of things. I've trialed everything under the sun. I've trialed giveaways. I've trialed discounts, like 50% discounts. I've trialed free ceremonies. I've trialed book with me and I'll give you some movie tickets. I've done everything, and I haven't ever done a full free ceremony, but I have done 50% off. I've done everything and none of them have made a difference to my conversion rate, to be honest.
And I can back that up as well.
Yeah.
Exactly the same data. That as you said, you want people to choose you for you, not because you're a bit cheaper, not because there's a discount today. You just want them to choose you because they get you. Because, and here's the reason for this. This is the long play. This is what you can glean from someone with more than 3 months of experience in the celebrant industry, is that you want to turn up to weddings where people value you and love you and value what you bring, because it'll be a very short career if you're turning to weddings where you're not appreciated, because you're like, you know what, I could go to Macca's and people will love the burgers I make.
Totally.
I don't have to go to your bloody wedding and cop all the crap.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so true. So I actually am now at a situation where I offer nothing. I don't offer a discount, I don't offer a giveaway, I don't offer anything, I just offer me. I offer me at an expo at my normal price and with all of my normal inclusions, and that's what you get. And, you know, some people say, oh, but people go to an expo to get discounts. Well, that's fine. I don't want them to book me for that reason. And that,
absolutely.
And that probably means, it does mean that I get now less work out, my return on investment at expos. I get less work out of the expo than I did in my first year when I was very cheap and people hired me because I was cheap. But it means that at least I'm getting more valuable, more I'm getting people who are my people. I'm getting people who want to book me and will book me regardless of what I'm offering on the day. And that's more important to me than taking lots of bookings. I could offer a free ceremony and get hundreds of leads and probably take more bookings than I do otherwise, but I'm just not interested in that. I don't want to give away what I do for free, and I don't want people to give me their leads just because they might get something free out of me and because they don't want me. So yeah. I hope that for this celebrant who this is a first for. I hope that's helpful. Oh, my other big tip about expos is to stand in front of the table, not behind
yes,
it.
Yes, yes.
Often there's a table at an expo, you know, and I've watched celebrants sit behind the table like they're sitting in an office behind a desk and wait for people to come to them. And guess what? They don't. So they sit there all day. I've watched celebrants, not just celebrants, other suppliers as well, read a newspaper sitting behind their table at an expo. Guess what? You've just paid $2,000 to be at that expo and now you're sitting there reading a newspaper. Could you look any less interested?
Although, can I say, if that is you, keep on doing it. It's really making it easy for the rest of us. It's like, honestly, we appreciate you pissing into the wind like that.
That is a very good point. Very good point. But if you're going to be there, stand in front of your table, approach people. Don't wait for people to come to you. I've tried lots of different approaching lines. I've tried, do you need a celebrant? I got bored of that. I tried Josh's, can I marry you for a little while?
It's a win.
It worked really, really well and then it stopped working. I don't really understand why, but I got some really weird responses. I'd say, hey, can I marry you? And they'd go, oh, not today.
Or, are you free tomorrow?
Or, can I marry you? Oh, sorry, but I have a partner. Yeah, I wasn't actually proposing.
People are so beautiful, hey?
So now I just look, are you looking for a celebrant? Is my opening line, yes, we are. Great. Come over and have a chat. So that's kind of where I am now. I don't even ask them for their date anymore. I don't even check if I'm available. I just talk to everyone because I got really hung up on, what if I'm not free? I don't want to waste time with that person or, you know, blah. I got really hung up on that and it was taking like time and energy and joy out of it. So I just now talk to everyone because even if I end up not being free on their date, if they've loved me, they might tell their friends about me. So I think it's worth talking to whoever wants to talk to you, quite frankly. And it's better.
Yeah, absolutely.
From the perspective of the people who are walking past you, it's better that you're talking to somebody else than standing there doing nothing because they go, oh, that person's in need. I'm going to go over there and stand in a queue. And that happens. People queue up wait to talk to you because, that person must be good because they're busy and, you know, engaged. So, yeah, they're my big things about expos and hopefully that's helpful.
I think that's a very, very helpful.
I think we're probably going to talk about expos again at some point, but let's move on from expos for now.
I think that might make for a show for the week, Sam.
I think it does. I think that's pretty cool. I think we've done a pretty good job. I'm pretty happy. And I hope that everybody out there enjoyed listening to us ramble because you know that we do that. Please hit us up, hello@celebrant.fm, if you have any questions
I need to bring one little thing before we wrap up.
Oh!
Because there's something that you and I have meant to bring up for the last two shows and we forgot.
I was about to forget again, wasn't I?
I thought we could just drop a domain name and just...
Sure.
We can just drop it out there and then when we're ready, we can like let everyone figure out what it is. But you can visit the domain name and there's an email box to... find out when we launch. And I thought, should we just drop the domain name? Do you want to put it out there?
Yeah. Yeah. It's celebrant.institute.
No www, no .com, no .au.
Well, you know, you can put a www in front of it and it still works.
Well, you can, but geez, you don't have
but
to.
You don't have to. Celebrant.institute. Visit it. Sign up to our little mailing list and we will let you know as soon as we're ready and it'll be cool and awesome.
Sarah, always a pleasure to do the pod with you.
Always a pleasure, Josh. Thank you very much. And everyone, we will talk again and be in your ears again.